This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by BetterHelp.
This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shit. Drop the intro. Inner Ho Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who is double-cheeked up and double-masked up on a Tuesday afternoon and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, who didn't think about an intro, so I'll just be regular Akua today, a black, female, demisexual, mental health parent and all of that, pronouns she and her.
We love it. We love to see it. Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're packing up, but not really because it is still a pandemic, but we're heading to the Southwest and we're talking all about sex, love, and dating as a black fat femme in the Southwestern United States. Plus we're getting into academia and organizing work in the realm of race, sex, sexuality and the body.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it and the hashtag Pod In so other people can see it. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Ho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Ho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can also join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community. That is C-U-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y. And head over to innerhouprising.com to pay a ho.
Shout out to Queen Latifah. And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to do all the things. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email address is in the show notes for this episode. And we are starting it off just hot and ready this episode. We're getting into things. We're getting hot because we're going to Arizona, which is a lot hotter than here, I think. I don't know. Our guests will let us know. But let's introduce our guest and topic of the day in a segment that we call Fuck It. I shine bright in all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright
in all our different colors, all our different colors. Yes. So today we are going to be speaking with Carlin Bradley, pronouns he, him, they, them. And he is a black, fat, queer, femme scholar, community organizer, artist, educator, and a Southern California native who is currently residing in Tucson, Arizona, or the ancestral lands of the Tohono O'odham and Pascua Yaqui people. He is pursuing academic degrees in both political science and gender and women's studies at the University of Arizona. When they are not being an academic hoe or organizing in the community, they enjoy hanging out with their friends, cooking a good meal, engaging in literary and visual arts, and working on their two podcasts. Welcome, Carlin.
Hello. I'm so excited for this. I'm fangirling, right? So for a little bit of context for folks, because you did actually interview someone else that was from Tucson. And so when I heard the episode, I was just like, okay, yeah, that's great. That's not the experience that I have had in Tucson. And that was when, and I remember you all were like, oh my gosh, yes, we need to come to Tucson. We need to party and it's going to be fun. And I was just like, yes, you should come to Tucson and talk to the black people. Because black folks here, we have a very different experience.
So Carlin is referring to an episode that we did with Kiawi called My Two-Spirit Femme Bitch Slapped Me in the Face, which is a great episode. For context, Kiawit is a person, who is Yaqui. They are indigenous.
They're Yaqui. Yeah, Yaqui is how you pronounce that.
Yeah. She just did this amazing episode about her experience coming into her two-spirit identity and was like talking about parties and all that kind of stuff. And me and Akua were like, yeah, we got to go party. But we did have many people write in who were also in the Southwestern United States who were like, it sucks over here. We are having a shitty time dating. And we did an open call. Like, if you are someone who is in the Southwestern United States and you are Black and have had this shitty experiences, let it, like, what's going on over there? And Carlin wrote in 2020, and that was when we fucked up.
I did.
We didn't answer a goddamn email that whole year. But yeah, we reconnected in 2021, and Carlin has been a really awesome part of our Patreon community as well, just out here singing and cooking and all of the very good things. So yeah, we're very excited to have you on the show. So you are not originally from Arizona, are we correct?
Yes, no, I'm from Southern California. So I grew up in a cute little suburb in Glendora. That's my hometown. It was white as fuck, though. Like, so shout out to all of the people who are listening to On IHU who might be in Glendora. Hi, I'm from your town. Yeah, so that's where I grew up. I grew up there, and I moved to Arizona in 2013. So I spent like most of my life in my hometown. My cousin actually was the first one. He came to Tucson, to the University of Arizona in 2012, and he was like, bitch. He was like, you're trying to get your degree. You're trying to like move on and grow as a person. Come to Arizona. And then I got accepted, and in August of 2013, I came to Tucson, and life has not been the same ever since.
Yeah, so let's start with what it was like when you first arrived in Arizona.
So it was actually so fun when I first got here. So for those of you who are into astrology out there, I have 6 Capricorn placements. So like Capricorn is strong in my chart. So Saturn is out here. Structure, being rigid, being like repressed, and moving away to Arizona, where like literally moving to a place where the only person who knew me was my cousin, was, I got to start over. And I allowed for myself to explore in ways that I don't think that I would have if I would have stayed in California. So it was wonderful. The first year at the University of Arizona really was whimsical in a lot of ways.
sounds like a Netflix show that I'm ready to watch right the fuck now. So speaking of all of these people who you met, can you tell us a little bit about, I've never been to Arizona, neither has Akua. And for all of our listeners who have never been there, what was the demographic like of people not only in Tucson, but also on the university in general? Because I know that can be like two different things.
Yeah. So that was like also complicated for me, right? So the University of Arizona is a PWI. It's a predominantly white institution. I think we're at like 50% white people, and then like literally everyone else makes up like the other half of our population of students.
Yeah.
So for me, moving from, I thought I was like, oh, the Southwest, like it's gonna be a little different, and it wasn't. It was literally, it felt like, it feels similar to demographic wise to me being in Glendora or like the LA surrounding area, because Glendora is in Los Angeles County. And gotcha. So I was like, okay, it doesn't feel like I have shifted too much. I'm still dealing in spaces that are predominantly white. The Southwest, Tucson specifically, does have a high white population. And then the next highest demographic of folks is Latinx people. And then there are a lot of indigenous people here as well. So, and then being on campus, though, it was really cool because there are all kinds of folks. There are a lot of international students from different places. There are a lot of APIDA people. APIDA is Asian Pacific Islander and Desi American. So that was really cool because I hadn't been able to share space with a lot of APIDA people growing up. In Glendora, there were like a handful of APIDA folks that I like grew up with, but it was like literally them and like no one else, right? So that was really nice. Is the university does have, if you look for them, right, if you find folks, there are a lot of really great diverse people, but you have to like search for them.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So it sounds like finding community was not, you know, throwing a stone's rock. How did you find community in Arizona?
Yes. So, sorry, I laughed because it's actually a funny story.
Oh, I thought that was like a trauma laugh.
No, it was, it's a funny story. Okay. So I ended up working in African-American student affairs. So my university is unique in the sense of we have cultural and resource centers based on identity, and each cultural and resource center has their own space, which is not very common. A lot of times on university campuses, they'll have like a multicultural center. We have six. We have LGBTQ affairs, the Women and Genders Resources Center, APASA, which is Asian Pacific American Student Affairs, the Ana and Adalberto Guerrero Center, which is for Latinx folks, NASA, which is Native American Student Affairs, and then ASA, which is African American Student Affairs, which is where I ended up working. So the way that I got my job and then in turn ended up finding a rich Black community, it started out with an angry email that I sent.
Yes. Love that energy.
So we have community councils. So the African American Community Council, they host a dinner. So the event... Yeah, the event was, it doesn't approach Blackness in a way that is like very nuanced, and it felt very full of stereotypes.
Oh no. Okay. You got to get into what the
Okay, so like it was like, "Oh yeah, we're going to cuz they were like, "Oh yeah, you know, we want you to welcome you to the campus, and so we want you all to know we want to have foods that are familiar to you."
Oh, no.
And so they're like, "So what? Yes."
That's exactly what I thought. I didn't want to say anything.
Yes. So they're like, "So that's why we had a barbecue, and then we go and I was and we had peach cobbler for dessert," and I was just like,
yikes.
Yeah, and it wasn't even, and then it was done by like the school's catering, and the food was trash. So it's not even like good food. So on top of it being offensive, it also wasn't delicious, right? And there is good food in Tucson. And so there are good Black people who cook delicious soul food, right? So I wrote, they gave us a feedback form, and I wrote my feedback, and I was just like, "Hi, I'm new, and I feel like that this thing was very stereotypical, and I didn't like that because Blackness is like expensive. And I think that there's a better way for us to be able to do this that isn't relying so heavily on like, niggas eat," like, I didn't say that, but like, but like that, like, niggas like barbecue, right? And like pussy poppin' music, which is fine. Like, I don't have any problem with that, but it was the framing of, "This is how we're gonna come together." And so I left, usually you leave those things anonymously, but I was so hot about this. I was like, "You can contact me for further discussion at this email." And so I didn't think that I was going to get an email back. And then I did. And so I got an email from Matisse Moore, who is the former director of African American Student Affairs. Shout out to Matisse. They responded. And they're like, "Yeah, I want to talk more to you about this." And that started a beautiful journey. A beautiful mentorship, and then also me working for African American Student Affairs, and then kind of unpacking my internalized anti-Blackness, exploring my queer identity, finding Black feminism, which then led to me becoming a gender women's studies major. So it was like this very pivotal moment that led to so many other things.
That is a beautiful story. It started out with some dry ass barbecue chicken. And then it just grew into a very well lubricated community finding experience.
Yes.
That's really dope. What would, so like you were introduced to this community via your mentor at your university and stuff like that. What did it look like interacting with other Black folks and other POCs off campus?
I didn't for a long time, actually. So I was really invested in doing stuff on campus, but it really wouldn't be until I dropped out of school that I really then was heavily involved in the community. And then that kind of was like the next phase in the transformation of how I got to like where I am now. But for the first like 2 to 3 years, I was really just doing stuff on campus with all of the various centers and the different people.
I like how the community organizing becomes a whole different chapter in your life, because it's actually the question that we wrote right before we put in a break. Okay, so more about the next phase in Carlin's life. But first, is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit, or helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good, relatable ass time? The people out there in podcast land are saying that it is, and we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating for the homies. That's us. And if you got some little extra change, you can drop some cash in our PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho. Or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. It's a very good podcast. We thank and love you all for your continued support, homies. All right, we're back with Carlin, and Akua's got a question.
What does organizing work look like for in Arizona, both in your academic space and then, I guess, in the general populace and community?
Tucson is like an organizing, there is like a very strong organizing community. There are a lot of coalitions that are built on stuff. Some of the particular issues that are organized around include undocumented folks, because we are a borderland. There's a strong Black Lives Matter chapter here, which I'm actually a part of. There are issues around wages. We have a strong union here, actually, even though Arizona is a right-to-work state. So workers' rights are like a huge thing, because we have a high poverty rate here in Tucson as well. So those are some of the things that, so there, those are some of the things that folks, are usually organizing around. You know, I feel, blessed, because there have just been so many different people that I've been able to learn from and be in community with. So I feel like I have a really robust understanding of things, largely because I've been able to organize with like the people and follow the lead of the folks who are experiencing these things. I mean, one of those being learning from Indigenous people about some of their practices, learning about like what sovereignty means to them, because it means different things to different Indigenous people, how they move through what community means, and what does like land recognition mean, and what does like even giving the land back to people, like to Indigenous folks, mean for different folks, has been amazing to do and learn from. So yeah, there's all kinds of really cool shit happening here. The challenge is, though, is sometimes holding space for all of those things, because at times it can feel like those things are conflicting with one another. So organizing has been challenging, and I have a reputation, sometimes good and sometimes bad. And my willingness to call and name when we're doing fucked up things, regardless of who you are, I don't care if you're a white person, I don't care if you're a Black person, I don't care if you're queer, I don't care if you're trans, if you're doing something that's harmful, I name it, and that has gotten me into, that has gotten me into some trouble. So the Black Student Union on my campus, we recorded a video, and then at the time, the president, who was a white woman, Ann Weaver Hart, she like came out and like marched with us, and then was like, oh, you know, just want to let y'all know that like the campus is here for you, whatever. And so me being my brilliant political strategist self, I was like, this is an opportunity for us to get more from our university than lip service. So we had a horrible meeting with the president. She microaggressed the dean of students. She was really dismissive of us. And so what we ended up doing as students, we worked together in the various cultural and resource centers, if y'all remember at the beginning of the episode I had described, and a group of us wrote the list of demands, and we called ourselves the Marginalized Students of the University of Arizona. And we were cross-campus, multicultural, multiracial coalition of students. And that was a wonderful and also awful experience at the same time. Looking back on some of the things, there are a lot of things that I would have done differently. But it was a really powerful moment. We wrote a 19-page of demands that is still being used today to influence not only new movement, but also it guided the university to shift some of the ways that it talked about things, which is what we wanted to do.
What were some of the demands?
So a lot of them were like super practical things, right? Like we weren't asking for outrageous shit. And the people who responded negatively was like, we're not asking for outrageous things. So like we asked for more adequate space for cultural and resource centers. So we're like, we need more like adequate, thoughtful, intentional space for the resource centers. The resource centers, their staffing had been cut over the years. So we're like, we need money. We need for you to fund staff. We want mental health services, but we want mental health services for people that actually match the identities of the folks that you're helping, because we do have campus. We have CAPS, which is counseling and psychological services, but like people, CAPS is overworked, and then most of the people who work in CAPS are white. So like we had stories of students going to CAPS and being gaslit by people because the provider had no analysis on race. So we're like, we need for people who look like us to also be offering us psychological services. We, you know, want free tampons for everybody on campus because people with uteruses need tampons and they should just be free and they should be available everywhere. So like, and then, you know, LGBTQ affairs was like gender neutral bathrooms should just be a thing on campus everywhere. And there was like free STI testing. So like things that were tied to the identities of the folks that would be beneficial though for everyone on campus. Right. So yeah, we weren't asking for outrageous shit. We were
It just sounds like you asked for a decent school environment.
How dare you ask for a decent
tampons,
school environment?
Nigga, what the fuck?
Some people were very upset about
space. You want to congregate?
Like STI testing is just like so duh. That is so duh on a campus environment. Like let's keep all of our students healthy.
Yes. And free, because they're like, well, you could bursar it. No, bitch, because if I can't pay my bursar off at the end of the semester, I can't fucking register for class. So free. But yeah, that was really, organizing is exhausting. And it was taking a mental and emotional toll on me. And I also internalized a lot of things because I felt responsible for this group of students that I was bringing together because I knew like what the ramifications for us could be. And I was like, am I doing the right thing? Because like, we're marginalized people, like explicitly fighting our school. We're putting ourselves in danger. Like there are some folks who are gonna graduate soon. What the fuck is gonna happen to them? And then with, you know, the political climate changing as it has in our country, Tucson's not that big. I was like, if people wanted to like kill us or beat our asses, like it wouldn't be hard for people to find us if they wanted to. So I was like really stressed the fuck out about those things. And I felt personally responsible, even though folks, you know, consented to doing this work. If you remember again, Capricorn placement. So I was like, I am responsible for these people, and if bad things happen to them, it's my fault. And so that did not help with my ability to focus. I was very anxious all the time. I also overextended myself, so I ended up having to, and also I didn't have money. And so that was the other thing, is I was always stressed the fuck out about money because I was paying out-of-state tuition at the time. So I finished fall 2015 semester, wasn't able to return in spring of 2016, still was helping with organizing though. We released the list of demands. The way we did it was really cool. We were super messy about it. So I was like, we're going to send this email to the president, and I'm going to blind carbon copy every single person that's an administrator whose email I have so they don't know who got it. And so I was like, so this will create, I was like, we have to distract them. We have to create a frenzy. And then we were like, and we're going to try to simultaneously release the list of demands on all the listservs that all of us have access to, so it gets out to as many people as possible. So that was pretty fucking cool how we did that. And it worked.
That's badass. Once again, this is a Netflix series that I would like love to watch, to be honest. Where's the Netflix series?
Where's the movie on?
So, as you know, you dropped out, and I assume that you interacted more with Arizona at large when you were not on the campus space, as you've said. What has your lived experience been as a Black fat femme in Arizona?
Yeah, so once I dropped out of school, I had a lot more free time. So then I was like, okay, cool. I could, like, try to date and, like, have sex and shit because I'm not fucking anxious all the time. That has been a mess. It has been a mess. And it has, I don't want to say gotten worse, but it has shifted to me finding more layers to the fuckery that is being a Black fat femme in Arizona. So one of the things is a lot of people are fat phobic, right? And so, like, I'm like, even some of you listening to this show, you're probably fat phobic.
Ooh, drag them one time for the one time.
We live in a society that teaches us not only to be fat phobic, but that fat phobia is an acceptable form of hatred. Many folks, and a lot of people code their fat phobia in various ways. And so, like, I wasn't always a fat person. I've always been a big person, or I've always been a person that was bigger than, like, everyone else, which is different, though, than being, like, embodying, like, having a fat body. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear about that. Mm-hmm. And so as I moved from having just kind of being like, oh, I'm bigger than everybody because I'm taller and I'm not white thin, and to being like, I'm fat, people have also interacted with me differently. Mm. And one of the things that has happened is a lot of folks will say that they're not interested in fat people by saying, using coded language, like by saying things in their profiles like, so like whenever I see someone who says, like, I like hiking and I like going outside, I'm like, you're fat phobic. Like, I'm like, I feel like this is a way for you to signal that you don't want to, that you're not interested in fat people because you think that fat people don't do those things. I'm like, me and one of my friends, we go hiking. We've been going hiking once a week. Yeah. So, like, you tried it, bitch. But, like, it's like using things like that, or people will say, I'm only interested in fit people, but that I'm like, that's vague because I'm like, I'm flexible. I can do the splits, bitch. Like, I literally used to dance in high school, can still do a pirouette. So, like, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? And I'm like, I know what you mean by that. You mean you're looking for people who look a particular way. You're not actually thinking about, like, athleticism. Yeah.
Can I interject really quickly?
Yeah.
Just because, you know, as you dragged us, I was one of those people. I struggle with my own internalized fat phobia. And I feel like I've said that on this show. Mm-hmm. And that example about people who write in their bios, I like hiking. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to, like, you know, do that labor and kind of clarifying that for me, but I do want to learn in real time. I feel like for me, if someone said, oh, I'm looking for energetic, sporty, active people, that would be coded, but stating the hobby that you like, how could they phrase that differently?
I feel like the context also matters too, right? So, like, if I see someone who is in most of their pictures shirtless, or, like, if all of their pictures are, like, them being outdoors and, like, they are, like, a thin person and they're like, I like hiking, I'm like, yes, you probably do actually like hiking, and you also probably are still fat phobic, though. Right? Uh-huh. And so for me, it's the context that matters, right? Okay. And I could be, and I'll admit, I could be projecting, like, that person might not be fat phobic, but I have not had the luxury, though, of most people being thoughtful about how they think about fatness. So I err on the side of like, well, because fat phobia is the default, more often than not, folks are probably being fat phobic. And I think that one of the things that I will say before somebody gets defensive while they're listening and is arguing with me in their head while they're washing their dishes, because I be doing that shit too, is that you may not even recognize, or like you might not be intentional about it, right? Like there are some ways that folks, and that's the thing that is like hard to unpack about so much of the violence that we experience and act out on one another, is most of the time we learn these things when we're younger and then normalize them and then get to a place where we don't even recognize that those are the things that we're doing, but we're doing it. And fat phobia is one of those things. Is we learn from a young age what types of bodies are and are not acceptable, and we learn the myriad of ways to describe them without ever having to utter the word fat. And that's what happens a lot of times, right? Is that people will signal that these are like that I don't want fat people, because I assume a fat person won't be able to go hiking. I assume a fat person can't be energetic. I assume a fat person can't be athletic. So, right. So that's kind of like how I'm coming to that conclusion, is it's the implications that are built into what is being stated.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you clarifying that. I have a hippy dippy pie in the sky kind of question. And it's like,
yeah,
I think, because like fat phobia is the standard, right? Like how racism is the standard, mm-hmm. and transmisogyny is the yes. standard, and transphobia is the standard, and all yes. that kind of stuff. If you are someone who both acknowledges that you like to do these all kinds of energetic things or whatever, and you are also someone who acknowledges that these things are often tied to coded words related to fat phobia mm-hmm. and even ableism, should you then, like, would it be weird to see someone in their profile be like, I love all bodies, or like something like
no,
that?
No, it wouldn't. There are ways that folks signal those things too, right? Where folks will say, I don't have age or like race hangups, right? Mm-hmm. Because they recognize that those are things that like people are engaging in having to navigate. So no, it wouldn't be weird if someone was like, all body types welcome. Like, and it sounds kind of like a gross thing to say, but I feel like, if I saw that, I'd be like, cool. So I, at the very least, know that this person is engaging at some level with, like, the things that I have to experience and navigate, like, as a fat person. So, no. So I personally would say that I don't have a problem with that. I don't know how other folks mm-hmm. feel about that. But for me, I'd be like, thank God. Like, someone is actually thinking about bodies and not being, like, one-dimensional about it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then some of the weird shit that has happened to me that I've had to like move through is on the other side of like just explicitly being like, I hate people with fat bodies, is like people who like fetishize fat bodies. And there's like a particular way that like I think Black fat bodies are mm-hmm. fetishized. So like a lot of people, when they have approached me, have been like, oh, do you have a fat ass though, right? Like associating like me being fat with like me being like, oh, because you're Black, and that means that you're gonna be curvy and you're gonna have a big old fat ass. And I'm like, I have a humble booty. So I do not have a fat bubble butt. Like it's just a regular booty. It is not video vixen bouncing up and down, right? And like there's and that is associated, though, that's like an intersection of like anti-Blackness and fat phobia, where people are like, oh, Black people have a particular type of body, and then like people are upset when I'm like, no, here's my nude and my booty is regular, because that's not the shape of my body. I have an apple shaped body, so most of my fat deposit is like in my lower stomach, and everything else kind of stays mostly regular. It doesn't go to my ass or my thighs. So yeah, there's so there has been that, where folks have will fetishize fat bodies. And I'm like, I don't like this either because it's still dehumanizing. You're still not seeing me holistically, and I don't like it. And then one of the other things that has been really like odd to navigate has been that I like now have to deal with more is like the femphobia that exists. So like I've always known. So before I was like outwardly femme presenting, folks would be like, you know, no fats, no femmes, no blacks. But then I was like, okay, cool. Well, I don't look femme. So then like that wasn't necessarily a barrier for folks like engaging with me. But then I would sometimes figure out like, okay, how do I still feel comfortable or not with like how this person isn't engaging with me? And I'm like, I feel like if I had sex with this person, it wouldn't be enjoyable because even through our like interaction, they feel like they have ideas about femme people and I don't want to deal with that. And then now that I'm outwardly femme presenting on all of my things, like for those of you who are watching on YouTube, and then for those of you who may just be listening, on the podcast, I'm currently hair curled, turtleneck on, lips popping. I have a beautiful yes. red lipstick, and part of that coming into like my queer identity and really living authentically as the femme-identified person as I've always known that I have been, but never was like able to explore because I didn't have language around that. A lot of folks ignore what femme means and think that it automatically means that I'm a trans woman, which I'm not. So like, and that's like, just to be clear with folks who are also listening to this episode, I'm not a trans woman. I'm a femme identified person. And to be clear, there's nothing wrong with being a trans woman. I just don't identify as a woman. I'm a femme identified person. That is like my gender identity and my gender expression is femme. But people are like, oh, trans. Oh, okay, you're a trans woman. And I'm like, but I'm not. I'm not a trans woman though. And so there's like that interaction, and there are people, there's someone who like misgendered me and was like, had messaged me, and they were just like, oh, I'm looking for a girl like you. And I was like, I don't use. My pronouns are literally in my fucking profile. I don't use girl. I'm not a woman. What? And so I was like, this is weird. I don't like that. So that has happened. And then there's also people who will think of femme and think femme means like submissive. But like submissive in like, not in like the way that, again, like y'all have explored on IHU, where there was someone who came and they talked about what does it mean to be a sub. Mm-hmm. Like not like that. Like they think like they have like very binary, oh, okay, I'm dom masculine. And that means that I'm just gonna come and like fuck you in the ass and like you're just gonna like it. And I'm like, no, that's not what femme means. Femme does not mean submissive. Femme literally just means femme. It just literally means like a certain way of expressing your gender, but has nothing to do with like the types of qualities that you have, because there are definitely like femme dom tops. And so that has been strange too, of seeing how people have their ideas of masculinity and femininity really rooted in like toxic masculinity and these binaries, and they try to fit me into these things, and I'm like, that's not what that means. Mm-hmm. For me, just because I'm femme doesn't mean that we are not going to negotiate the types of things that are going to happen to me. It does not mean that I do not also expect reciprocity to happen, because a lot of people are like, oh, because you're femme, I just want to come and like fuck you, and you're not, and nothing is going to happen to you. Like, I'm not going to eat your ass. I'm not going to make out with you. I'm not going to swap oral. Like, there is no expectation of pleasure to happen to me. And I think a lot of people think that simply because I'm femme that I'm supposed to not expect pleasure, which has been, it's like wild, to think about, but then when I talk to I have a friend who she and I talk a lot about it, and she's just like, oh no. She's like, yeah, as a woman, like, she's like, this is the kind of shit that, like, she's like, men expect all of this. She's like, yes, they expect for you to not orgasm. They expect, she's like, they basically, a lot of men just look at you probably now because you are femme presenting. She's like, they're reading you as a woman, and they expect for you to not be pleasured because that's what they have been taught. And I was just like, I'm like, but I like pleasure. I'm like, I want to come too. Like, I think that I have orgasmed with like a handful of folks. So like one of the things that happens is like I don't come because I usually don't feel comfortable. Just because like if you're having sex with someone for the first time, you're just like, okay, like, and I'm like, that was fun. And then I don't know if people feel disappointed because like so many folks, they wrap up their ideas in like hooking up or having sex with people with having to orgasm. But I'm like, no, I had a good time. Like, I had fun. I had fun because we communicated with each other. I had fun because, you know, you licked my booty hole and I saw God. Like, it was a good time for me, right? And so I have these experiences where I'm like, I've had good times with people, but then those folks, because I didn't come, I don't know if they feel like they weren't, you know, they wasn't man enough or whatever. And then, like, they ghost me. And I'm like, cool, but I still had a good time. And I will still, like, hold this as one of a good sexual experience that I had. But it would be nice if folks approached me like a human and didn't have all of these just weird hangups around fatness and femme people. And I actually got to this place where I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna like explicitly in my profile say that I'm a fat person, because what was happening before is folks would, I would still put like pictures of like full body pictures of myself. So I'm like, you can see that, you can see that I'm not skinny. Like, I am not a small person. And then people would still see my nudes and then block me. And I'm just like, okay, so like you thought that I looked different, maybe. So then I was just like, I'm fat. Like, and if you don't fuck with that, like, you've been warned, you know. So if you're interacting with me, you know that you're interacting with a fat person.
I want to get even more into this, but we're going to take another break. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Maybe it is, I don't know, the crushing weight of bigotry in these here United States. Maybe it's specifically in the Southwestern United States. We don't know. I know for me, the crushing weight of bigotry does prevent me from achieving my goals sometimes. And something that really helps is my favorite online therapy service, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Plus, you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. And the service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, as do we here at the Inner Hoe Uprising. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. And you can visit betterhelp.com/IHU, that's Better H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Inner Hoe Uprising listeners, that's y'all, get 10% off their first month by going to betterhelp.com/IHU, that's Better H-E-L-P.com/IHU. Now let's get back to the S dub.
So I wanted to add something in as you're talking about yourself as a Black queer femme. I want to be transparent that I remember reading your bio and I was like, how are they femme, but their pronouns are he and they? Mm-hmm. And like, there was just this blind spot in my mind. And then as you're talking, it just like clicked. And I was like, oh yeah, like, like, there was just this explosion in my brain that was like, aha, here was that blind spot. It, you know, exposed. So I wanted to, you know, be transparent in that.
Well, and so I thank you for that, Akua. I appreciate that. And I do want to, I will say though, that for me, the he in my pronouns is less of like, cause I feel the he, and more of like, he is like familiar, if that makes sense. So like the they, them is more like, is what feels more at home for me. The he, him is like, well, I grew up being called he, and I grew up being referred to this way. And there are some people, who like, this is also like familiar for them. And like, how do I create space for that? So like, for example, I went to visit, I went to Texas for 2 months, and both of my parents live in Texas. And so I was visiting my dad, and spending time with him. And so this was the first time that I had seen him as like fully femme presenting. And so, he calls me like son and bud and like yeah, so like he does like gendered things like that to me, but it doesn't feel weird because I'm just like, my dad has been like saying these things to me like forever. So it's less for me in the sense of like when people that I don't know call me like him, I'm like, I like cringe, because I'm like, who are they talking about? But more for holding space for the familiarity that does exist for me, because there are people who do care about me and who've known me my whole life. And that is like how they have known me as like he, while also still they acknowledge that like I have been queer. They're like, we've known that you've been queer forever. Pardon me. We know that you have, you know, they're like, okay, you femme now, whatever, like, we good. And like, they don't, like, it doesn't bother them. It's kind of like holding space for that. And I think that as time goes on, I will move away from using he, him, and then exclusively use they, them. But for now, it's also like, for me too, because like part of fully coming into and living out and recognizing my femme identity, it's a process. And everyone's process is different. And for me, I am still like, he, him feels familiar. Even though it doesn't feel right, it still feels familiar. So like, that is what it is for me. And I, less and less I'm attached to it, and one day I'll be able to fully go by they, them. But for now, it is like holding space for like that transition that is happening.
Thank you for adding that, and sharing that. You also went on to talk about some very weird interactions with folks. What is your weirdest hotel?
So like a weird hotel. So I have two actually. One time when I was back in California, I climbed through a window to have sex with someone, but then I ended up not even having sex with them.
Oh, no.
Because it was just like, it was just too much. So like, I literally climbed in a window at nighttime.
Like, this is what I'm talking about, the Netflix shit. This is the Netflix shit, like, that I referred to.
I dead ass was like, this is a horrible idea. I'm black as fuck. Like, I should not be climbing through people's windows at night. Like, what am I doing? So that one. Okay, actually, I have a few now, but like none of them are Arizona. They're all California. This other time, and so I think my cousin and I had talked to each other, and we think that we had sex with the same guy. Because I was telling him my story, and he was just like, I hooked up with this guy. I had sex with him in his garage on the floor. Not one of my proudest moments, because he was like, oh yeah. But like, it wasn't even like his garage. Like, he lived in a condo. And so he like shared a garage with like his neighbor. And he's like, yeah, I can't. He was like, yeah, sorry that we have to like have sex in the garage. But I have my son this weekend, and this is the only place that I can, like, have privacy, but, like, not really, because hopefully my neighbor doesn't, like, open the fucking garage while we're having sex. So, like, I literally had sex with someone on the floor in the garage, and I was just like, damn, I really did that. It's like that. And so I told my cousin, and my cousin was just like, bitch. My cousin was like, I think we fucked the same person. And he was like, I'm pretty sure that he told me the same story. And I was just like, either this dude is a fucking liar or has like a wife or something, because how is it that
both... Why is it always in the garage?
I was just like, yeah, not my proudest moment. But the sex was good, so whatever. And then one of my other strange hotels is, so I didn't bottom. So like, I didn't have like penetrative sex until I was like 20 something. So like, I lost my virginity, in Tucson, and the guy that I had sex with, I don't even know who he was. I just know that he was like some light skinned guy in the army. So shout out to you if you're listening. The dick was good. So I had like put him in, cause he like gave me his number. And he was just like, we should like link up again or whatever. And so I like saved his number in my phone as like sexy army guy. Because one of the other things that like people are weird about. And I remember the reason why I didn't tell him I had never had penetrative sex before was because of a conversation that I had with someone else who was like, yeah, I don't like having sex with people when they're virgins, because they were like, I don't like the responsibility of that. And I was like, that's a really fucking weird way to frame that. And so like that stuck with me. And I was like, I don't want people thinking like, they have some weird responsibility or like pressure, because I've never had penetrative sex before. Because I had done a lot to prepare for it. Like I had done research and I had practice and I had gotten like comfortable with like my sexuality. And I was like, okay, like how am I gonna like negotiate this? And how am I gonna be able to express like, oh, actually I need more lube, or that does feel good or that doesn't. To make sure like I was prepared. Cause I was like, look, ain't nobody about to tear my booty hole up. So it was like, it was fine. But I was just like, I'm just not going to tell him because I don't want it to be like this weird. I don't want it to be a weird thing because it's not a weird thing for me. So I don't want to make it a weird thing for him. But shout out to sexy army guy. The dick was good. My number's still the same.
Shout out. Shout out to sexy army guy. So... First of all, the garage thing, like, it be happening like that sometimes. I fuck in some weird places, like, on a deflated fucking air mattress in, like, the apartment of somebody's apartment of somebody's apartment. Like, nobody owned that apartment. It's been a time. But what has been your steamiest hotel, or some of your steamiest, like, some of the best?
My steamiest. So I feel like some of my best interactions were just because, like, the experience was good. Mm-hmm. So, like, there was someone who I had sex with in one of the residence halls on campus. And, like, that was just really good because he was just, like, very communicative and, like, super reciprocal and everything, which I love reciprocity.
Yes.
And he was great at eating ass, because everyone is not good at that. But he was, I saw Jesus, like, I'm telling you, like, Ariana Grande is wrong. God is not a woman, but God does exist because I saw them. So that was fun. One of my most recent experiences was actually really good, just because, like, the person who was topping me was not super, like, I just want to, like, put my dick inside of you. They were, like, they fingered me for a long time, which was amazing. And so, like, I had fun because my prostate was, like, And so I was just like, yes, we could just do this forever. So, like, that was fun because like, he was actually interested and was, like, turned on by, like, me moaning and groaning and seeing God again. And so, like, that was a nice experience. I'm trying to think of, those are the two that like immediately come to my mind. And then I've just had like, not odd, but just like things, all of my sexual experiences. And I think that it's really funny how sex happens in like real life versus like how it's like portrayed to us. Like sex is really fucking awkward more often than not. And a lot of my sexual experiences have included like really goofy things and just like really like just funny, cute moments where I'm just like, that was very like real life. And it wasn't, I was like, this is very like not how porn portrays sex. Like porn is purely a fantasy because that does not happen in real life. Like it's awkward, it's clunky, it's like it's goofy sometimes. And so there have been like a lot of like fun, goofy moments that I have had with folks where you're just like talking about like random stuff. So, like, I remember there's this one guy that I had sex with and I kept laughing because he was like, I want you to spit on my dick. I want you to be nasty. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable spitting on your dick though. And he was just, I was like, that's not who I am. I'm not that person. And he's like, but I want you to be that person. He was like, let go. It's fine. I want you to be nasty. Just go ahead, spit on it. And I was like, I don't think I could do that. So like, I didn't spit on his dick because I didn't. I was like, I don't, that's, no. I was like, that's too freaky for me. So I like, and so like.
I actually, here's another secret. I actually find spitting on dick awkward. I can't do it. I just can't. Yeah. I can't do it. I'm sorry. I don't think I ever had the act of spitting. All right, yeah. I'm just going to leave it there. I can't do it either.
I didn't. He was like, come on, it'll be fine. And I was like, I feel like you'll judge me and I'll also judge myself. And I was like, I don't think, it's not going to happen. I was like, I don't feel comfortable spitting on your dick. And he was like, okay, fine. But he was really nice about it. And we had sex like 2 or 3 times. And then he, like, each time he was just like, you know, he's like, you can let go, let loose. He's like, I want you to be wild. And I was like, I'm not that wild. I was like, I'm not spitting on your dick. That's not going to happen. But I also am very, I'm really good though about, because like, there are things that I don't like. So like, I hate, when people like try to like push your head down on their, I'm like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. I will throw up on you. That actually almost happened once. I almost threw up on someone because my gag reflex is...
It be there.
Like,
it be there.
It's my gag reflex. It's like, bitch, we're saving your life.
It be protecting
we
you.
We don't care. We are keeping you safe. So...
Intruder alert.
So, yeah. He tried it and I was like, yeah, no, don't do that. So, I have to like ease into it and then like desensitize it over time so my body knows I'm not in danger. Yes. And so, yeah, I hate that, but I'm really good at like when people try to push my head down, I'm like, the next stop is good. The moving the hand away is good. Which is another reason why when people think that I'm, you know, femme means just passive, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I will move your hand. I will tell you to stop.
Yeah.
So we've gotten into some of these hotels, but I'm a romantic. So I got to know, what are these dates like? Like, are they just like picnics in the desert? I just think of Arizona as the desert. So like, enlighten me into what y'all be doing. Even if it is a picnic in the desert, which might be cold or really hot.
So there's like a lot of cute hiking trails here. So people can go hiking. I've never been on a hiking date before. I have been on dates with folks. Like I've gone out to eat before. You know, we have movie theaters and we have regular shit too. We have movie theaters. We do have a lot of beautiful nature places that folks can go. I'm a fan of like if I feel comfortable with someone. So there was someone who they came over to my house And we like sat down and like chatted and had like a glass of wine. So it really, so like for me, I'm very much like, I love intimate space with people. Like, so like, I like situations where intimacy can be created. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm a fan of that. So like, I would not be like a movie. Like, I'm like, let's go. No, I don't want to go to the movies because I can't talk to you. Yeah. Let's go somewhere where like, you won't be that distracted and we'll be able to have a conversation with one another. And usually though, and I'm really bad at this, is like, if I feel like someone said something and I'm just like, ooh, you don't understand, this is the way that I need for you to, I'm gonna not talk to you anymore. So like, and particularly because there are Black people in Tucson. There's a myth that there are no Black people here. There are. but like, because the Black community here is so small, though, because anti-Blackness is so prevalent, I don't fuck around with like, if you are anti-Black, if you're fatphobic, if you are classist, if you are a misogynist, like, I don't want to, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'll give you a chance. Like, nah, nigga, like, we will fin, I will laugh through this date and then I will ghost your ass because it's dangerous to have those kinds of people in your space. And because I am a community organizer, because I actually have like an intersectional feminist praxis, there are a lot of people that like just like are not dateable for me because their politics are fucked. And that is part of the danger, like, not like you're gonna die danger, but like danger as in consequence of having a feminist praxis and not just like being a feminist when it's convenient, is there are people that you might be like, ooh, you're really nice, and you know, the booty hole game, you know, you eat ass like a Nicki Minaj song, but like, you're fucking racist, or you're anti-Black, or you're a misogynist, or you hate undocumented people, so you're xenophobic, and like, I can't date you.
It makes
like,
the booty eating a lot less fun.
It makes, because then all I think about is like, what else?
A racist,
like,
eating my ass.
What else are you using that mouth for? And it's xenophobia, right? So it literally kills the mood for me, because all I can see is you being a misogynist or racist, or like, I can't see anything else. I know that's not true for other people. Some people, they're just like, I don't care. I'm not one of those people. I care, and it literally fucks it up for me.
Yeah, it's lonely at the top. That's kind of how it feels like.
So let's say you are dating someone who is not all of these things, comfortable, you know, you're comfortable having them in your space, you know, you invite them over, we know you like to be cooking and eating.
Yes.
So what is a cute or your go-to whole meal to cook for someone? And I'll give you context for a whole meal. I had to like really conceptualize this, but really what I mean by a whole meal is the meal you cook to seduce. The meal you cook to get them, you know, the tryptophans and all the things together. Like, and I know mine because I do it all the time. Ooh. But
I don't know. That's a good question. Because I've never cooked a whole meal, because I usually bought them. So I'm like, what can I eat so that I can still, you know, get my back blown out later? But if I'm just seducing you just to like pull you in so you can come like tomorrow and blow my back out later, it would definitely be some type of comfort. Like, all the food I cook is comfort food. So it's like mac and cheese. I'll make you some mac and cheese. I know my cousin is going to clown me about that because we had a mac and cheese fiasco once.
What?
One time I fucked up my mac and cheese once and they will not let that go. But my mac and cheese is delicious. So I would cook you my mac and cheese. I recently made a pot pie from scratch. So like, I might make you a pot pie. I might make you, depending on, are we having a breakfast date? If it's a breakfast date, I might make you some biscuits and gravy. Like, you're going to be comfortable.
We didn't, none of us ate breakfast before this recording. Y'all niggas is killing me right now.
What is your whole meal, Akua? I'm curious.
So my whole meal consists of, just like yours, macaroni and cheese. It is either my three cheese or my four cheese baked macaroni and cheese with a baked salmon, probably with a garlic butter. Ooh. And then some type of vegetable, depends on, you know, where I am. Probably most likely a go-to is broccoli, but I've fallen in love with Brussels sprouts, and the way I saute them, they just like melt in your mouth. I'm sorry, I'm hungry. And then I will, like, if I'm really trying to, like, if I'm digging into my pick me kind of thing, like, space, I might bake you a cake. Like, I might pull out the red velvet.
You're one of
cake.
Those bitches.
Yeah, I might do it depending on who the nigga is. But if that's like to seduce you, to get you all sluggish, and then we're going to figure it out. But if I really, really like you, I will. If I really, really like you and I'm digging into my pick me, you going to wife me pot. I will cook you jollof rice. And I don't make jollof rice for a lot of people.
Akua ain't never even made jollof for me, okay?
Exactly. Yeah. I will pull out that pot and get to going. Those are the things.
See, this is why I got to work on my oxtail this summer. Not this summer, this winter, when it's still cold, because I don't want to be cooking in the summer. And then that'll be my seductive peak Jamaican pygmy. That is some jerk pork. Damn, y'all fucked me up. I'm really hungry.
That sounds good. I'm like, all of that sounds delicious. See, okay, yeah, the cake, yeah, that all of that. So I'm like, Akua, can you seduce me? Like, I was just like,
You talked about the biscuits and the gravy. I was like, can I get this meal? Like,
I'm working and I'm learning how. I haven't done it yet, but I will keep you all posted. I bought biscuit cutters, and so I am planning to, sometime soon, start learning how to make homemade biscuits, because I don't currently know how, but I would like to learn too, because I want to be that bitch.
I'm so hungry.
I want to be the person that, and you know how the Jill Scott song, when she's talking about people make your breakfast, I want to be that person that... I'm gonna be making you biscuits from scratch.
But your politics gotta be on point though. That's the yes. one.
Yes, the key.
Okay. Well, we gotta get off food because I can't do this anymore. But speaking of politics, so we know that you create programming that educates folks on the topics of race, gender, and sexual orientation and power, which seems very relevant to your lived experiences, because if niggas had this education, maybe things would be going a little bit more smooth. Look. But so where is that happening? How's it going? What's going on?
Yes. So it started... really being like inside the academy, because that's where I was. So like I've done a couple of workshops for some of the cultural centers. And then I also have done a few for the community. So I did a series actually a couple of months ago. I did a 3-part series with the Dunbar Pavilion Center. Shout out to the Dunbar. So the Dunbar is a Black center here on the Dunbar. It used to be Dunbar High School, which is in the Dunbar Springs, which is one of the neighborhoods here in Tucson. Mm-hmm. It was the Black only high school, because Tucson did used to be segregated. So the community bought it and uses it as like a community center. And so I've done workshops with them. And so I just recently did a workshop with the Sierra Club, I did two workshops with them. So I am branching out. I'm expanding outside of the academy. And I actually have a workshop series that I'm doing for my two jobs that I have. One of them is going to be like a 7-week series where we're going to do a different workshop each week. So it's happening in various spaces. It's been a lot easier to do because we are in digital age of Zoom, to be able to do more. Because before, a lot of workshops happened like in a physical location. So then like that, only people who were there in that moment who were able to physically be present were able to have access to that. So while I do miss in-person workshops and facilitation, because there is just something really cool about going to different places and being like in person with folks. I do appreciate how Zoom and all of the other Zoom-esque things have created this access that we really didn't, that we like kind of sort of thought about before, but like we're much more aware of like, how do we make this accessible to folks? How do we make this interactive for people? So yes, that is where that is happening. I will give you an email if folks are interested in hiring me so we can do a consultation. I can tell you what my prices are, and we can figure that out and set that up.
Better go on and get hired out here, Carlin. Yes, we will definitely include all of the things in the show notes. As we're wrapping up, we have two very important questions for you. The first is, you mentioned something that blew my mind on a Patreon chat that we were doing a couple of weeks ago, and you informed me that Legends of Korra was trash politically. Yes. And I was like, oh shit, I even look at it like that. So let us know. Restate your hot take on Korra.
Yes, here's my hot take on Korra, and I'm right because I'm a Capricorn. I didn't like how they treated Korra. So I hated Legend of Korra, but I didn't hate it because I hated Korra. I didn't like how they treated her. I feel like it was a missed opportunity to show the right ways to move through trauma, right? And so I had said in the chat that the way that they treated Aang in his trauma, because like traumatic things happened to Aang, they did not treat Korra with the same graciousness. And I thought, and it felt racist. It felt like it was irresponsible for them to make this woman of color who was queer and who was dark skinned, and for them to what really felt like just mistreat her through the entire series. I felt like they disempowered her a lot for no reason. They didn't give her a very good support system like she had. Like Aang had. And it was really triggering to watch because I was just like, yeah, this is, I was like, this is how dark-skinned people get treated, like shit. And so I wish that they would have, I wish that I could like Korra more. I wish that I could have seen Korra be cared for, because I think it's so important for us to not just have representation, but for, and you know, you talk about this in ass media, that we need representation that is like intentional. And I don't think that they were intentional about how they treated Korra. And how they didn't even unpack and explore some of the trauma that she experienced. Like, one of the people who betrayed her was like a family member, and that's devastating. And they didn't take time to be like, how would that fuck up your psyche? How would that impact you as the Avatar when someone who you knew and loved was the person who betrayed you? And that's heartbreaking, right? And I don't think they did enough to overcome some of the bias that is built into anti-blackness, right? Because Korra is dark skinned, so like colorism is tied to anti-blackness. So like we're not automatically going to empathize with Korra because we've been taught that we don't need to, because she's a woman and because she's a dark skinned woman. So like we have been taught that those people are volatile and mean and are undeserving of our empathy. And they kind of made her like kind of mean, kind of brash, and at moments I was like, I feel irritated by the things that you're doing because they are not showing why you are doing these things. They're just showing you as being hot-headed and not telling me why do you respond this way. I'm like, okay, you're using this as a defense mechanism, and I only know that because I too do the same thing, and I know it's because I have been harmed by people. And they needed to unpack that. They needed to walk us through that shit, because again, we live in an anti-Black society that teaches us we don't need to empathize with dark-skinned girls. And they failed us horribly with the way that they mistreated Korra. And one other thing that I want to say that I didn't get to say in the other conversation that was really important, because my friend and I, shout out to Lexi, we had this really great conversation about what Korra being removed, being disconnected from her former avatars, how that was another added layer of violence. And we were like, okay, why does this feel super traumatizing and triggering to us? And it was like, oh, because that is actually a lived experience that like BIPOC people have of literally being removed from their culture. And for them to just like put it in as a plot device, but then not really treat it with the nuance that it deserved of like, what does it mean for you to have to rediscover yourself because of like colonialism, was really irresponsible. And it hurt. It was like, it was hurtful to like watch this happen to this fictional character, because I was like, I embody that. I literally am currently on a journey of reconnecting with myself and my magic. This is like a random side note. Y'all had Juju Bae on yes. your podcast, and I listened to her. And it's funny because I rediscovered her through your podcast after another friend of mine had was like, you'll love her, as I had started like getting into like ATR stuff myself. She was like, magic. She's like, here's a Black practitioner that I think that you'll gel with, and you'll love, like, you should learn from them. And then I was like, okay. And I had listened to an episode of theirs, and I was like, I like this. And then I kind of like fell off, and then I listened to y'all, and I was like, wait a second, I know her. So y'all just out here connecting me to all of these things. But it was irresponsible how they handled it, because that was like, that's a lot of people's actual lived experiences because of colonialism. And for them to just be like, yeah, it'll be cool to just like disconnect her from the avatars, and then like I don't think they ever like remedied that. They were just like, oh well, figure it out, bitch. And I'm just like, no, like, this is not okay. So that was really violent.
Spicy but extremely valid take. But Aku has a question. Speaking of takes, spicy takes.
Can you tell us a bit about your podcast and what they're about, and you know, the spicy takes you give on those, if any?
Yes. Okay. So one of them is the podcast that I host by myself. It's called Beneath the Surface. It has two episodes. Because I just haven't had the capacity to record more, because y'all, for those of you who are not familiar, and like shout out to you all at IHU for all you do, because podcasting is fucking hard. It takes a lot of time and energy, and I'm terrible at editing. So I just haven't recorded any more episodes of Beneath the Surface. But it is something that I want to get back into. And that one is me just giving you my thoughts and my analysis on things that are happening. So the two episodes that currently exist, one of them are about like the presidential debates that happened like 5,000 years ago. And then the other was talking about the former president's response to Charlottesville. So like, if that gives you context for how long it's been since I've recorded, it's been a minute, but I've been doing other stuff. And then the other podcast that's more recent and is more is updated more regularly is Comic Book Queens, and that one is with my cousin. We co-host that, and we talk about comics because we're blurreds. And we love superheroes, we love fantasy genre stuff, and so it's just really us talking about heroes that we really like and giving our feminist analysis on like MCU movies and all that kind of stuff. So yes, you should definitely check them out.
That sounds so fun. I was looking at my phone because I was getting ready to subscribe. Well, thank you very much for spending the last hour and a half or so with us, Carlin. It has been great hearing your perspective and insight on all of the things. Where can folks find you on the internet if you want them to find you on the internet? Where should folks go if they want to hire you and all the things?
Yes. So if you want to find me on the interwebs, you can follow my Facebook. My Facebook is Carlin Bradley, so just my first and last name. And then my Twitter is DonTray1224. So Don Trey spelled phonetically. That's DawnTray 1224. So you can follow me on Twitter and you can see some of my tweets and hot takes there. And you can also follow me on Facebook, where I post a little longer winded analyses of things.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you very much. All right. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes, and let everyone you know that's such a weird thing to say, but that you enjoyed this episode with Carlin, and definitely check them out on the interwebs. We appreciate every single last one of you.
If you guys would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inner Hoe Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inner Hoe Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Hoe Uprising Community, that is CUMMUNITY, and head over to innerhoeuprising.com to pay a hoe. If you guys want to follow me, you can do so on Instagram at Hey A Cool Girl.
And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram, Twitter, and Clubhouse if any of those things are what you're into. And don't forget that our sponsor today was BetterHelp, and you can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/IHU. Have a lovely week, because you motherfucking deserve to.
Bye.